You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul.
And my name is Rob. Thank you guys for joining us for this episode number 924 and our Christmas Eve episode.
Christmas. I feel like we should hear a jingle in the background. Ching, ching, ching.
Maybe we will.
Maybe we will.
Maybe they're hearing it now because it got edited in.
Ah, yeah. That's a good point. I probably won't play it on YouTube then. Oh, Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays. Whatever you believe in, we don't really care. We just want you to have a happy holiday.
Happy holiday. Isn't there a song like that?
Happy holidays.
I think the last thing they want is for us to sing. That's probably the last thing.
I thought that's the first thing they wanted.
I think you're wrong.
Well,
does it matter?
You're right, Bob. So for today's episode, since you're at home, hopefully enjoying your time with family, although I can understand if you're not enjoying time with family, because if you're like me, then you have a crazy effing family.
Well, crazy or not, may you enjoy them.
Spending 2,000 miles away is not a bad thing. Love you guys.
Yeah. They're probably saying the same thing. Whew,
oh,
Paul's
they're not
2,000
listening.
Miles away.
Yeah, like, oh, man. Get that
we dodged
character
a bullet
out of here.
That year.
Oh, we sure did.
Anyways, we do hope you're having a nice holiday season, and gosh, that you're ready. Or maybe you're listening to this on your way to the mall to buy those last-minute gifts. Whatever
Actually,
your situation.
Maybe they're driving to the mall a day after Christmas because they're the true smarty pants and realize that all the sales and the time to truly buy gifts is the day after Christmas.
Wow, yeah.
Like, I tell my family now, I'm like, if you're expecting a gift before Christmas, you're high.
So, under the tree, you put a bunch of IOUs?
Like No. IOU. There's nothing under the tree. They just get it a couple days late, and if they're the type of people that are sensitive about it being there on Christmas Day, I'll just be like, oh, well, I'm sorry, the shipping didn't get there on time.
In fact, let's just forget the tree. There's
No, I love the tree. I got
okay.
a tree.
Okay.
I'm just saying that, like...
Real tree or fake tree?
Okay, what is Christmas really about?
Well, it's about Jesus, if you really want to get down to it.
Okay.
He asked. I mean,
I feel like you went like half Baptist there for a second where you just talk normal and then you're like, well, Christmas is all about Jesus. I'm just like, whoa, man, we went into full preach mode right there. That was like 0 to 100 preach.
Okay.
I wasn't talking about Jesus. I was talking about more of the family morals and values surrounding the holiday.
Okay. If that's what you want to say Christmas is about, then we'll go along with
okay,
it.
Okay, okay, okay. Jesus or not, I was just trying to get to the main points here about Christmas.
Which are, please.
No, you go for it.
Enlighten us.
All right, I'll go for it. For me, Christmas is all about spending time with people and being grateful for the people that we have with us. And it's all about being grateful for the things that are going in our lives, the things that are going right. And I think oftentimes people forget just how many things they have as we live in a society that constantly reminds us of things that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to get caught up into a system of, you know, oh, I don't have this, or oh, I don't have the newest drone. Or, oh, I don't have a new Sony A7R Mark III. Or, oh, I don't have those new tires for my truck. Sorry, I mean, you're asking.
Well.
And it's been a real wake-up call for me because as I've taken less and less drone jobs to focus more and more and more on training, my revenue has gone down significantly. So I've had to really remind myself about what I need to be grateful for.
Yeah. No, I like that.
Yeah? Does that flow into the...
Yes.
You thought I was going to say it. I was going to say it. And then you were like, you just cut it off.
I did. No, I didn't mean to cut it off. But I think the other thing is, as far as what Christmas is about, and certainly this is what we try to teach our kids, it's more about giving than it is receiving, right? Who out there that's part of your life or that you can make part of your life, can you give to? Whether it's time, resources, whatever it is, something that you know that they would love to have, they can't buy for themselves. All kinds of scenarios that we could paint, I think that would count.
Like I said, you know, in our earlier show, I really want to do something to give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we just set that up for Friday. So at least that's one way that we can give back.
That'll be fun. I think
there's other ways too.
I think that's a great idea. And what he's talking about is a little fly day for the kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is cool.
We're going to invite a nice select weather. Few. Yeah, hopefully it is nice weather. We're going to be like, if it's windy, we're not doing it.
Well, windy is one thing, but I'm just thinking if it's too cold, they might not come out.
Well, that's why I said 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't need to talk about that. What we need to talk about is what Christmas is all about. And what is Christmas going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years? Did you know that it was actually 5 years today that Amazon came out and said that they were going to have drone delivery for your packages?
Really?
It was five years ago.
Wow.
2013.
Shows you how long these things take.
It does. It does. And even now that they're getting their certifications under Part 130, was it 135 or 137? Can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They're going around the law the way it's written now. So that being said, what is Christmas going to look like in 5 years from now? Do you think we're actually going to have floating packages? Not floating packages, but flying packages landing in our yards? Are our new first world problems going to be my neighbor got my package and I didn't?
Because the drone delivered it to the wrong place?
Yes. In my neighborhood particularly, drone delivery would not work out well. Unless we had, like, on top of the swamp cooler, a little landing pad that was like, land the packages here.
Yeah, so I think Amazon will logistically figure that out where they're going to give you some mechanism for setting up the landing spot, right? Maybe they send you some sort of landing pad or apparatus or something.
So can we deep dive into the white rabbit hole of speculation that's been going on at all these trade shows that I can enlighten you on and everyone else? Because these are all the conversations that everyone wants to have as soon as they meet me at a conference room. And frankly, I want to have them too. So
is it related to the question? Should we play the question? We actually have a question today.
I just kind of jumped right into the question, which all is right. He was just wondering what is, you know, the world going to look like in 10 years? Where is the future of drone technology? And that's why I thought it would be more fun to paint the picture of the world we live in rather than just talk about specifically what are drones going to do in the future.
Cool. Yeah, I like the extension. Sure.
So what if DJI or someone else put out an application where you could aggregate all the mapping data that's been taken from different drones? So you could map out the environments of certain businesses, of certain homes, of neighborhoods, and any location. So you actually had a map before the drone ever flew of the entire 5 mile radius around you.
Okay.
Now in that 5 mile radius, now we have those maps so that our drones don't have to do as much computing power as they navigate between the trees and whatnot to land in front of your house. But I could definitely see issues where cars hit the drones or something happens where the drones get hit by, you know, a branch moving in the tree and voila, there's a downed Amazon drone. But Amazon is doing this very intelligently. Like, think about it, right? If I want to test my drone delivery program, where can I do it in a city where I know very little drones and air traffic is operating, but I have to be in a city?
Something like Manhattan or D.C.?
Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So let's look at the new locations for Amazon, right? Crystal City, Virginia, and New York.
In Brooklyn, right?
In Brooklyn, right? Yeah. Crystal City is supposedly where Amazon is going to be building the new, it doesn't look like a beehive anymore, but they're building the new drone hive, where essentially it's going to be a new warehouse, a new logistics station, where we essentially go from a three-dimensional world to a four-dimensional world, or I guess you could say a 2D world to a 3D world. Whereas, you know, for the longest time, we've had trucks delivering things to us on the ground, whereas now these warehouses are building up instead of out.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's almost like if you figure out the most difficult place to do it first, then it's gravy from there.
Well, I think Jeff Bezos is definitely, I mean, look at his tack plan for Amazon. I think that makes sense 100%.
It does. The other thing I was thinking is why not deliver these into the backyards? I mean, if it's a drone, and for those that have backyards, that seems to make more sense than the front yard.
Well, okay, so if we take, again, the example of D.C., very little people have backyards. I mean, we had a really, really nice house in Old Town Alexandria, and our backyard was 12 by 12.
That's big enough.
That's really small.
Is it not big enough? I think 12 feet by 12 feet?
I think if auto modality was programming Amazon's drones, then sure, it's big enough.
I mean, how big of an area do they need? Or is it going to be just somewhere near your house?
I actually think the area of this room would probably be big enough.
So this is smaller than 12 by 12?
That's like 14 by 10.
Really?
I think so.
So yeah, it's the same. Anyways.
14 by 10. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the spec sheet, but well, I think in 5 years, we could see in very large cities where drone delivery is possible. And I think that Crystal City, Virginia is the best possible place for Amazon to try this out. It is an FRZ. It's a special flight rules area, also a no-fly zone for most people. And that being said, if there's very little air traffic flying around, then it's going to be really easy for Amazon to try out their drone delivery system.
Yeah.
But I will say, this is on the eve, as like yesterday I was like, I think I'm going to cancel my Amazon Prime membership. There's no value in it anymore.
Really? Why?
Well, because Walmart does everything for free. You don't have to be an Amazon Prime member to get 2-day shipping. And according to a couple articles, their 2-day shipping is more reliable now than Amazon's.
Well, and you can return it to a Walmart
store
locally.
Which is what they talked about a long time ago in that Forbes article that you shared with me about Amazon versus Walmart and infrastructure will always win.
Yeah, and kind of how the whole brick and mortar argument is coming full circle to benefit Walmart.
Yes.
It's interesting stuff.
Dude, I could talk business with you all damn day long.
It's fun. But what else are drones going to be doing in the future that are really exciting?
Well, I think the other big thing that we're going to be seeing is medical delivery, because a lot of, you know, this economy, especially in New Mexico, is driven by the geriatrics. And I say that because Albuquerque is becoming a heavily retirement. It's becoming like a Palm Springs, except we're cheaper and not as hot.
Right.
Like legitimately.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you can handle the high elevation and the lack of oxygen, which if you can't, don't move here.
True. No, we're 5,000 feet in the air. So.
And that's in the valley, whereas it's 11,000 feet at the tip of the mountain, which is just 10 miles from my house.
So medical delivery, that's already happening in places like Africa where the drone laws are obviously a lot looser.
Yes.
And they're delivering blood and really important things.
So I think we could see the same thing in disaster relief scenarios as well. I think that we could definitely see these types of systems with deep integration with, you know, even things like blockchain, which would be perfect for this. I definitely see the medical industry leading the way for the same reason that you discussed in the last show we talked about, where you said if you have a greater good and you're helping out other people and you're always focused on that, it'll always come around to you. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Drone delivery, if it's health-based, will always be widely accepted by the population in a positive tone. The example of that is the drone that was used in Germany and in Switzerland that was the flying defibrillator.
Yeah.
And I mean, that drone is in that room next door.
Right.
The Y6. It's literally sitting right
there.
That's
all it is, yeah.
So I think that when you mix the needs of human society in a way that the benefit is greater than the problem at hand, then I think what you're going to see is a wide adaptation.
Like more acceptance of drones in the air.
Also, okay, so this is just a theory of mine for the future of drone technology, but I think that we could be seeing drones flying the highways a lot more, and for two very different reasons. Reason number one is accountability. I could see more drones doing speed analysis on vehicles, which frankly I would really hate because speed limits are not a problem. I'm sorry, but when you have the largest, most heavily populated metropolitan area raising all of their speed limits, I think that says something. Besides
that,
DC, once again.
Really?
Yeah. Go on it's not I-66 because I-66 was taken by the original 66, but it is I-66, but it goes from essentially the Potomac all the way out to I-81, and it used to be DC has always been like 55 miles an hour everywhere, blah, 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 no faster. Now it's 75.
Interesting.
So
it's more about the driver and being in the wrong lane.
Let me ask you a question.
Not using blinkers.
Let me ask you a question. Actually, I hope that drones do this. Imagine if drones were flying over the highways and they were actually doing what the FBI does, where they play router, they play Wi-Fi router or cell tower router, and your phone is actually getting its cellular signal from a drone above the vehicle, and it can tell if you're texting and driving.
Oh, wow.
Now, that would be something that I would... Oh, God, I wanted to cuss so bad right there. That is something I would love to see. Because the problem is not speeders. I'm sorry, but the problem is not speeders. The problem are the grannies and the little girls and the distracted dads who are on their phone looking down at their phone. I rail on my horn every time I see someone do that now.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
Because
you definitely... I mean, you see people with two hands and steering with their knee.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're looking up, but they're spending more time looking at their screen than they are looking at the road by a pretty wide margin.
I think I'm going to get a PA installed in my truck. I used to have one in my Land Rover in college, and it was a big joke, but so, now I have like a legitimate reason.
Get off your phone.
But how does that happen in terms of the drone staying in the air? Because batteries are not that. How does that happen logistically? That's a big issue to have
so
to solve
it is
in that
a big
case.
It is a big
solar,
issue.
I guess? I don't know.
But solar could definitely be, you know, a solution. Look at the, what was it, the International or National University of Taiwan. Remember, we did an interview with them at CES last year, and they were doing a solar-based drone. And I lifted up the drone, and it was lighter than a Phantom.
Hmm.
And it could fly for like 5 or 6 hours. No. It was a fixed wing.
Fixed wing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking fixed wing for some of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think battery technology is definitely going to advance itself. We already saw that the inventor of lithium batteries just came out with an even better. I think it's if I remember correctly, the article said that he changed the negative anode to the battery, which would allow for a deeper charge cycle, a faster charge cycle, and a slower discharge cycle so that he could retain more energy or battery density, I believe is what it's called.
Yeah.
And we saw the first rendition of this with the Model 3 series with Tesla, and Tesla's partnership with Panasonic to create these fantastic batteries, I think, is only going to get better.
Sure.
I don't think that we are going to be stuck in the 80s and 90s of using Duracell alkaline batteries for everything, when simply the amount of technology that we're using right now is accelerating at a pace that alkaline batteries can't keep up.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to be a believer that alkaline batteries were like the way to go, but now even on our microphones, they only last 4 hours versus the lithium, which lasts 12 and charges in 15, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true.
In 15 minutes, I meant to say.
It is progressing. I'm actually surprised that technology hasn't moved faster.
Well, maybe it has, and we simply don't know about it. And I would say the example is DARPA. But going on further, we talk about battery endurance and these long operations. I think in the future, we're also going to see very extended distance BVLOS operations. Mm. And I hate it when these, like, you can always tell, like, a rookie, like, you know, like a rookie in the FAA or a rookie in who's corporate jockey going to these FAA meetings when they're like, we're talking about BVLOS. BVLOS. Like, excuse me, are you talking about floss? No, BVLOS. Like, what? BVLOS? Are you talking about beyond visual line of sight operations? Is that what you mean? Shut your mouth. Anyway, you don't know how many times I just want to be like, shut your mouth.
That's
like,
funny.
Anyway, sorry, I hate corporate jockeys who pretend to be something that they're not. That's a life lesson for us all. But in the future, I think BVLOS operations will be significant. And in addition, I think we're also going to see updated designs. Like right now, we're seeing a lot of designs with vertical takeoff and landing VTOL operations.
Hmm.
And with these operations, simply we're allowing fixed wing airplanes to get the endurance they need typically for fixed wing operations, but with the ease and capability of vertical takeoff and landing. What we have not seen are these engines that are able to turn, right? So they go from literally vertical takeoff to then horizontal movement. At what point do we add another motor on the backside and then start sucking energy from the prop wash out of the planes so that we can have maybe the perfect, what do we call it? Starts with a P. The machine that always goes, what is it called? Gosh, I'm stupid.
I don't know.
Perpetual motor.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
you.
Okay.
I believe that perpetual BVLOS operations will be here in 5 years.
Wow.
And the reason
really?
Why is you will see pusher-puller setups that were used in the military back in the early 2000s before the funding was shut down by the feds because of 9/11 security, where they were using fixed-wing planes in the military that would also generate energy from solar cells on the wing and the prop wash from the motor itself.
That makes sense.
But the motor would only spool up as the aircraft elevated, and then the motor would turn down. But the second motor that was getting energy from the prop wash is still spinning on the way down. So it's this constant ebb and flow. Like literally, it's a constant wave.
It's feeding off of itself.
Yes.
That's
And the test that I saw at Sandia like 6 years ago, they were already doing stuff like this. So
yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have said
that.
So
what would some of the uses of BVLOS be?
Oh my God.
I couldn't help myself. What are some of the uses?
I couldn't help myself.
When you're geriatric.
The preacher's back.
when you're geriatric, you do geriatric things.
You are not geriatric.
I know.
Remember the definition of geriatric.
I just like to say that because I know it works you up.
Old people who don't live by the rules they set for their family. They're not considerate to other people. They're not willing to learn. They're not willing to change. They're just stuck in their old ways, and you do get out of my way, and I'm not considerate, even though I've been telling everyone in my whole life to be considerate, blah, blah, blah. Get out of my way, you geriatric.
Okay. Anyways, what's BVLOS going to be used for?
Well, BVLOS, I think, is actually going to be used for a lot of operations. Agriculture is going to be super key for opening up the agriculture market. That and part, what is it? 135. I can't remember now. I got 135 and 137 mixed up, but essentially spraying from drones, that's a big hurdle. When they overcome that, you know, agriculture is going to need BVLOS.
Maybe some inspection work.
Inspections are huge. Oil. Think about it. Oil pipeline inspection, even road inspection.
Yeah.
Tell me how many towns are there between Las Vegas, New Mexico, and Raton that you could actually set up some sort of base to do like infrastructure? It would not be adequate. It's just like the same reason as I-8, you know, Highway I-8 down by the border has its own cement plant in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And that cement plant is there because there's not enough infrastructure to haul cement hundreds of miles to create a road. So what do? They build it there. With BVLOS, we're going to be able to go those long distances and gather data at an unprecedented rate.
I'm just trying to think of other ways that could be deployed. And I think of like forest management, kind of keeping an eye on forests and disease in the forests and wildlife management, some things like that.
There's already USDA contracts right now. I actually wanted to go after one, but it's not realistic for me to go after one and still propel Drone U forward. But there's a contract right now for measuring vegetation index density, meaning how much vegetation, if I were to remove it from this area, would I clear up and then do watershed delineation management from that point, which it's really funny because you can actually get the same data from those maps. Anyway.
Interesting.
So the bare earth model would be hard to get, but that's not really what we're focused on if we're just calculating the treetop density. So
yeah. Gosh, it's really exciting stuff. One of the things, so we didn't actually play Ken's question, but he did ask this question that's kind of led to this conversation, but various uses of AI, artificial intelligence, and how that will play into the use of drones in the future.
I think it's
going to
play into the use of data management and scalability in these large systems that we're going to need for BVLOS, that we're going to need for other things. Also, I think we're going to see a big, and I don't want to see AI. You know, Intel's like, we're using AI to do photogrammetric models of churches. I'm like, I'm sorry, but the machine is not making any decisions on how you flew to optimize the data. There is no AI, you dumb. And like, I hate the way that people market these things. Like, honestly, these companies that are made by super intelligent people have the dumbest people in the marketing department. And all they do is completely overhype these things that you're just like, ugh. And then anytime someone's excited about like, oh my gosh, AI, have you seen drone AI? It can make like 3D models. And then I'm like, you know what? You need to go back to Marina Del Rey and just stay there. So,
but they're going for the masses, not the few that actually understand this stuff, right? In
clearly,
marketing and so forth.
That's
so
audience.
Maybe they're smarter than we give them credit for. Right?
Not when you're intentionally misleading people.
Well,
anyway,
that's not about intelligence.
Yeah. So that being said, the reason I mentioned AI and where it's going to go with data is I think we're going to see drone mapping really become localized. And I think that we're also going to see a lot of these jobs become more and more localized. And what do I mean by that? Like if we talk about BVLOS operations, what if you could have like the gridlock system where a drone takes off from a box, pre-planned mission, it's flying BVLOS, it's communicating along the way, it's doing all these things. How are we going to manage all that data? And I think that's where AI and these systems are going to come into place to help us manage all of this data.
Sure.
In addition, the localized capability with data management is going to allow for things like drone mapping to be even faster and more efficient, where I think the traditional ways of surveying are almost going to go away. And I say that because imagine if you can go out and you look at Jason, right? Jason was just on the show, Next Gen Surveying. Instead of going back, processing the models, then putting the models in a plot line graph and then the plot line graph into AutoCAD and then into AutoCAD to shoot it out. These processes and these systems are going to get literally shrunk to the point where you're going to do it on the aircraft. I mean, you could do this right now with an M600 and the DJI, I forget the module unit that it's called, but it's essentially an onboard secondary computer for the flight controller. I mean, is it not Skydio? Skycatch is trying to do that with the A1 right now, but it's too different units together. I don't think the solution is quite there yet, but obviously they're going to have to get past some of the hurdles to like make sure that the solution works.
Right.
That being said, when we have these localized drones and systems, drone mapping, where we can process the mapping data on the drone in real time and then output that to the internet, is going to be like, whoa, efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that core human needs are going to push the most current advancements in the drone industry. And I think you're going to see it in, one, the engineering side, right? So drone mapping, two, the health side, so BVLOS and infrastructure inspections, BVLOS and health deliveries. And then Amazon, which is in its own world. Amazon has more power than the president, if you really think about it. And frankly, I think that they're going to be the first to drone delivery. And I think it's going to be in Crystal City, Virginia. And I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be effing comical.
Yeah, well, when you say that, are you talking about the U.S.? Because I don't even think it's going to... Has it happened elsewhere?
Yeah, in Australia, and DHL is using it in Germany.
Right. So we're talking about the U.S. specifically because it's happening elsewhere already, and it's just going to continue to grow in those areas where they're actually able to do more research probably on how to make it work.
True, but you have to understand that the United States is essentially the basis of aviation law for many other places in the world. So, sure. In fact, I think the FAA taught me a lesson. So, FAA, I hope you're listening. Actually, I know you're listening, so there's no need to say that. That being said, the FAA taught me a very, very intelligent lesson. It's not about having the information out there first. It's about having the most well-thought-out information, even if you're the last.
Even if you're the last.
Because even then you can at least defend it. Mm. You can say, well, this is why we did this. That's why there's 600 pages to explain a 10-page document.
It's insane.
Now, the FAA needs to step up and get these waiver systems in place. I think they started with, you know, Kevin, but they're nowhere close. And I think that in what we're trying to set up with Vic and the FAA, I think that we can be a huge driver in getting out some of that information.
Sure.
But they need to set up systems to get these waivers in a place where people can do it. And it's right. Not just a special waiver for some guy who works at a government agency and he gets an SGI and then he just keeps flying those things because he can pull out the SGI and be like, well, I'm government. So, hey, you know, we need to have systems that work for everybody.
Indeed.
Because right now what's going on is, and I mean, I even saw John McBride do this the other day. He's like, government or not, we're trying it. We're going for it. And people are doing that, but you lose so much credibility and authority when you just go against the grain like that and say, look, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're a one-off operator in a farm field and you have all this space where you can do these things, you know, hats off to you.
Right.
But I'm not going to openly go out and fight the government. Sorry.
Well, sure. But, you know, innovation.
But I will say, you guys need to get together.
and the reality with innovation is it's not always smooth. I mean, it takes people that are willing to take risks, right, to really push innovation.
It does. And I will say that there are some people at the FAA who are completely anti-risk because they want their retirement. And then there are people in the FAA who care deeply about the people and the systems and the small companies that are really trying to make a difference in this industry. And you know who you are. And there have been many females that I have met in the FAA who are really the leadership positions, or who are really taking on leadership positions without
sure.
being in them, that mm-hmm. are really leading and guiding the FAA to do the right thing consistently. And there is nothing but giant thank yous for that.
So. Well, and in the end, we have to always remember their number one goal is safe skies.
Yeah.
That is the number one goal, right?
Yep. And... In fact, reminds me, I got to reach out to Bill. But I agree 100%. Safe skies, safety is key.
Yep.
So,
awesome.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's Christmas episode. Merry, Merry Christmas. Happy
yeah.
holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you are celebrating, remember, we don't care. We just hope that you enjoy the time with your family. We hope that you give someone the benefit of the doubt. You're grateful for what you have. And you are a good steward for society as a whole. We know it's not easy to be good and do the right thing, but in the end, it only helps you. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Paul.
Merry Christmas. My name is Rob.
That's all? You don't want to say anything else? I'm sorry, you just led me on like I thought you were going to say a lot more.
Oh, was I going to say a lot more?
Yeah.
No, it's pretty short and sweet. I would like to hear from everybody as far as the conversation today. What's on your mind as far as what drones could do to add to society in the future? I
mm-hmm.
think that'd be really cool to hear that in the comments.
Oh, you know what? By the way, I forgot to give you that new red heart-shaped underwear, but I got a drone on the way that's going to drop it off before Christmas, so don't worry.
I'm so excited about that.
On that bombshell,
it'll go
that's
with
gonna
the pair I'm already wearing.
On that bombshell, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Drone You. Dashing through the snow.